Mr. Hinkle.
All right, so this, I think, is a procedural problem. Again, my understanding is if you want to do what they did, it seems the proper procedure would be to amend Bylaw 20 to remove the requirement to have a party platform. Clearly, they did not do that. Also, if you look at Rule 9, Platform Committee, it says the chair of the Platform Committee shall report the committee's recommendation to the floor plank by plank. The delegate shall at each recommendation, the delegates shall vote on each recommendation separately. After the delegates have debated and voted on all the committee's recommendations, if time permits, any delegate may propose new or additional amendments from the floor, which the delegates shall vote on separately. All the wording in every instance makes reference to plank by plank, a item, not multiple items. It's just crystal clear. That's if you want to talk about precedent, it's clearly in the entire history of the Libertarian Party of California. It's always been not the entire platform, it's but plank by plank. So to me, there can be no ambiguity regarding the wording. Again, Section 1, the party platform shall consist of a number of planks. Well, if we don't have any planks, that's a violation of Bylaw 20, pure and simple. And again, it goes on to say about being amended, deletion, or substitution of any plank at any time. Delegates by majority vote may delete a plank. Again, all the wording refers to a specific plank, not the entire party platform. So I think any reasonable person could look at this and say the bylaws were clearly violated by the convention, and therefore the JC should overturn the vote of the delegates. As far as the ambush concern, clearly many people were unaware, again, not from a bylaw standpoint, but just from a smart politics standpoint. If you are trying to get something passed like this, you can either take the open route where you let everybody know what's going down and everybody can have an open debate on it, or you can hide as much as possible the intent so that you can sneak it out at the end of the day on Sunday when clearly a majority of the people who are registered, I think it was like 138 delegates, I think, were registered at that point. And clearly the majority of them were no longer on the convention floor. And so from a politics standpoint, it was a bad decision the way they did it. But that's somewhat immaterial because, again, it's a clear violation of Bylaws 20 and also Rule 9. Again, if you want to do something like this, you clearly have to change the bylaws first, and then the Rule 9, those have to precede a motion like this to delete the entire plank. End of my comment.
Okay, so Starchild?
Maybe if Robert or Jennifer would like to go first.
Okay, Robert.
No, Starchild, go by all means, go ahead.
I'm still trying to decide exactly what I want to say here, so please.
Okay, I'll go ahead and go then. So, again, I just want to reiterate my personal position that I've worked quite diligently, actually, to the outcome that I wanted to see in this, which was the local California platform removed and the national platform in its place. That was always my personal intent, to help further that cause. So being here today as an appellant, it should not be reflected that that's not the outcome I wanted. Again, to reiterate Mr. Hinkle's point earlier in his closing remarks, this is more about a procedural issue in how things unfolded. I still would like to see that happen in the future. That being said, again, you only have to look at the video that's publicly available of the features within the events of the timetable that that unfolded during this, that you can see that there was a clear intent from the executive committee to ensure that this went through, as opposed to clear intent to ensure that all the delegates were informed of a thing and they be given the opportunity to make they want. That is my opinion of what happened. If this issue was approached from the standpoint of let's ensure all the delegates are fully aware of what we're attempting to do and they're well informed, this probably would, we probably would have a platform now and everything would be fine. But this was the procedures in which they unfolded are akin to that, that it was more about how do we get this passed, not how do we present this in the most correct bylaws and RONAR way. And that's evident in the fact that the person who was ruling on what's parliamentary and what's not was also participating in the process and the debates of and the merits of this. There's a clear conflicting interest in that point alone. That alone should be a sufficient enough evidence, in my opinion, that this, all of this that transpired was completely out of order. When you have the person that makes parliamentarian calls siding with the actual motion itself, I don't think enough of that was discussed here today, and that's important. Again, everybody here, everybody on the phone, I know everybody and I respect everybody and I understand what everybody's trying to do. I just think that the procedure itself, I took exception to how individuals, kind of in the heat of the moment, how things played out, mistakes just happened to be made. I know everybody's ultimate intent was the same as mine, which was to see this change. It just only got halfway there, and the way in which it got halfway there was, in my view, a violation of the bylaws. It should also be pointed out, and this is more circumstantial, but I think it should be said so people understand my point of view. If there was a concern that you wouldn't have two-thirds to delete the entire platform, but you had confidence enough that you would have two-thirds to adopt the national platform, then it seems to me that it was designed in such a way to delete the platform using a majority to bully a supermajority into not wanting to not have a platform. So if that was the intent, then that certainly doesn't go against the spirit of our bylaws and what they're trying to say, nor RONAR, where you purposely get a majority to delete a platform and then the supermajority in turn doesn't want to walk away without one, and they're bullied into accepting whatever you offer, which both offers were denied. So if they felt like they had enough votes for a supermajority, they should have just pushed it as a substitute supermajority, which would have been in line with our bylaw. And I'll yield the rest of the time.
Okay, Ginny?
Yeah, so it seems apparent, especially after this meeting, that the chair of the party, the parliamentarian, and the person who was intended to be the chair of the platform committee were well aware of the confusion and the possible stress that a motion like this would cause. They discussed it prior to the event and seemingly made an interpretation of the rule. Now, I don't think it was malicious, and I don't think it was sinister. I think they were doing it in the best of their intentions to have a clear interpretation, but I don't see evidence that they reached beyond the people who were making the decision on the floor. And that's not keeping with the integrity of politics and elections that the Libertarian Party expects of the greater political arena. So as others have stated, it's not the outcome of the platform that's in question, but it's making sure that we do things in an ethical manner that everyone understood what they're voting for, because that's exactly what the party's principle is intended to do on a national and state level. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, Starchild, do you have something you want to say?
Yeah. I generally concur with what's been said. I think that it's important in the spirit of all this, you know, there wasn't an attempt, I think, at all. And I heard Chuck saying there's no requirements, or forget the exact language you used, Chuck, but there wasn't a way to require the executive committee to announce the platform committee meetings, you know, teleconferences. But it could have been requested that they do so. And the platform committee certainly could have put it out by email that they were going to be having these meetings and tried to inform members to have them be given the opportunity to attend and weigh in on the discussions when they were really happening. Because while the formal vote might not have happened until the time of the convention, it's clear that the actual discussion and arguing over it and coming up with the plan happened much earlier. And that's when it's really important for people to be able to have the opportunity to be in the room to weigh in on it, you know, not after it's, you know, all but finalized and you're just going to rubber stamp it. The spirit of the bylaws, I think, is just, to me, it's plain as day, and it really does come down to the plank by plank thing. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever that the people writing the bylaws would have intended to require a two-thirds vote to just amend a single plank, but to allow the entire platform to be deleted with a simple majority vote. I think that makes no sense whatsoever. And responding to Alicia's point about, well, you know, she's saying, you know, you have two separate votes to give the delegates more opportunity to amend something separate. You know, but it was expressly stated, you know, by Chuck and by the platform committee chair that the approach was used in order to avoid that two-thirds threshold, and that's what makes it so inappropriate the way that it was handled. Because when you're trying to push something through with a lower majority, that's clearly not giving the delegates the full choice there, the prerogative that they would have to you know, require something to be passed with a higher threshold that is, I think, clearly intended by the bylaws. Last thing I'll just say quickly, it sounds like there's not really any disagreement that the Judicial Committee has jurisdiction here, but if for some reason you were to decide that you didn't have jurisdiction to rule on this or to rule on some part of this that came up, I would encourage the members of the Judicial Committee to consider issuing an advisory opinion anyway, even if it's not binding, because unfortunately our party procedures don't give us any other avenue of appeal, and this committee is pretty much the logical, you know, independent body to weigh in on something like this. You know, even if you decide for some reason that you don't think you have jurisdiction, I would encourage you to make a ruling that people can hopefully, you know, agree to go along with, even if it's not binding.
Okay, is that it for the appellant's closing remarks, or any of the appellant spokespeople?
I think so. I don't know if it's allowed, but I depending what the other side says,
through the agenda, so this is the time for the appellants to make any final statements. Do any of the appellants who are on the call have an additional time, a statement they want to make? You do have time if you want to make something.
No, thank you.
Okay, not hearing any, we will turn to the respondents.
Okay,
I believe
so
Alicia
I've
was going to speak
list.
First. You made a list, okay.
So I've made a list of, you know, loose ends, so I've got several subjects that I will throw in the mix or respond to issues that have been discussed earlier in this call.
I'm glad somebody's keeping track of it. Thank you.
Yeah, well,
the issue raised about participation of the parliamentarian. I think that's thoroughly addressed in our written brief, so I don't need to go into the details. I'll just reemphasize that the bylaws give all delegates rights to vote on all motions. It was also mentioned in closing arguments that, well, it was known this would be controversial, therefore there should have been more outreach. Well, every platform is controversial, every LP convention, and the rules don't change depending on the level of controversy surrounding it. And ultimately, all the platform committee does is make proposals, and it's up to the delegates to decide, and if the delegates don't like it, they can vote against it. So I don't see what the level of controversy has to do with what is the rule. Earlier there were questions about states don't have a platform, and the argument was made that, well, our bylaws mention a platform, therefore we have to have one. I think that argument has been addressed in the brief pretty thoroughly as well, that the purpose of bylaw 2 is to draw, outer boundaries over what we can do, and the other bylaws, put other parameters on it, but without mandating that there be one. So I think the brief addresses that sufficiently. So during this call, there were arguments that, well, if you don't want a platform, you have to delete the bylaw first. And it pointed to the fact that there was a proposal to this time that I don't believe was voted on to delete the bylaw relating to the program. And the argument was made that that's what you have to do if you don't want to have a program. Well, that's what you want to do if you want to make it clear that we don't expect this in the future, but what's happening here is the door is being left open to come back and adopt other language next time. Sure, you delete the bylaw if you never ever want to have a platform again and tell someone amends bylaws, but leaving the bylaws as they are gives the delegates the option to come back and adopt different texts next time, even if they didn't do it this time. And I'll point out that the motions that were made to adopt other texts, they would have met a two-thirds vote requirement, but just failed on the because of the number of delegates that were left in the room at the time was not enough to hit the majority of all registered delegates standard. So I believe there may be good indicators that the delegates wish to have something next time, and so that option is still available. So there was discussion about the singular nature of the terminology in bylaw 20.1, a plank and any plank rather than all planks. And on that subject, I would go to Convention Rule 8 and point out that how it says things are proposed. There's two different sentences there, that things are reported on plank by plank, but voted by recommendation. And this leaves open the possibility for, say they wanted to move language from one plank to another. That, it gives the ability to do that in a single vote because of writing those sentences separately instead of saying reported on and voted on plank by plank. They didn't write it that way. They're two separate sentences, and I think it gives some freedom. And so with the ambiguities that are kind of created here, during the convention, if the assembly had desired to divide it up into separate questions, take them separately, at the convention would have been the time to say, I think this requires separate votes. The assembly could have decided on that procedural rule and interpreted it themselves right then and there. Nobody did that, and instead they're asking a separate body to go back and do it for them instead of letting the larger body the parent body of the convention delegates make that decision on an ambiguity, and that would have been the proper protocol. There was a lot of discussion on this call about notice, and what did you do in advance and that sort of thing. Again, I'm going to emphasize there are no rules that require notice. So even let's assume the worst, and there was an evil intent to hide it and spring things on people without them knowing. It doesn't violate a rule, even if there were an evil intent there. And so if there's no rule violation, there's no basis to overturn a vote at the convention, you know, if no rule is violated. And you can't overturn based on a non-existent rule that, you know, appellants are arguing there should have been a rule for this. There's not a rule. You know, in the end, these are just proposals. The convention has to vote to adopt them or not. I would note that Convention Rule 8 even permits, you know, if time permits, after going through the committee report, proposals from the floor. Somebody with, you know, not a second of notice could make proposals and the convention would vote on them. That's how it's done. It was mentioned that, well, it's bad politics to do something this major at the end of the convention. Well, that's what the rules prescribe the schedule, and that's where it puts it on the schedule in this convention. That's where the platform always falls in the off years or the odd numbered years. So all these arguments are just, there's no merit to them. There's no rules violation. There's no basis to overturn. If they wish more notice, then they need to offer a bylaw amendment to constitute the committee sooner, give them make it feasible and require notice. But that's not the rules we have. And the JC should only enforce rules that exist. There was discussion about, well, it's improper to allegedly skirt a requirement for a two-thirds vote by using a majority vote to delete. Well, what is the purpose of the bylaws setting different thresholds for deletion versus adoption of other language if not to give that opportunity? That's why you write the bylaws that way, so that they can take actions to get rid of things that a majority doesn't support, whether or not there's, you know, strong agreement on what, if anything, should replace them. And I do want to point out that Chuck mentioned that the platform committee had agreement that, well, our first preference is to adopt some replacement language, but they also said there was agreement that even if the motion to delete passed and the other one didn't, and the motion to adopt replacement text failed, that having no platform as a starting point is preferable to the existing condition. So it was a secondary goal. If they can't get what their first preference is, their secondary goal was, you know, they were just fine if there was no platform, because that meant we would have a better starting point for next time. So it's, you know, this description that it was some kind of evil scheming of the rules. Well, that's what the rules say. That's what the rules say. So it's not, you know, how can it be improper to follow the rules as they're written? And as I mentioned earlier, it gives delegates a lot more freedom for what replacement text, if any, they want by doing them separately. In summary, I'll note that the appellants are not all unified on some pretty major issues here. They're divided on the question of whether or not a platform is required by the bylaws. That was noted during this call. And they're also divided on whether or not there is precedent in LP California history of always having had a platform. So there's not agreement on whether it's ever been done within California before. And I think I will wrap up my points there and let Mimi and Chuck take it from here.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for keeping track of all the things that people said. Okay, Mimi.
Okay, so I'm going to be fairly brief, and I'm only going to just speak to a couple things that I've again, I think I, during convention, kept my impartiality and didn't make any knowledge of a preference of mine of one way or the other. It's been brought up both in the brief and in this call that I was somehow, or actually the executive committee, which frankly it isn't, it's just the chair as a providing officer, was somehow making sure that things happen based upon the way I wanted them to happen. And I want to speak to that just very briefly because I don't believe that that's true. I think if you watch the tape, you can see that that's not true. But just a few things, you know, in one of Karen Ann's arguments, she said that, you know, for what was going on with hindsight being 2020, at such time, the best action would have been to spoon feed the delegates what they need to do. Chair Sarwark does this often to both the LMC and convention delegates. I would suggest that I tried to do that. I am not near as eloquent or seasoned as Nick Sarwark, but one of the things that the appellants brought up was a point of information that I asked and answered incorrectly. I maintain I answered that correctly. It was a very specific and confusing question that was first asked by one delegate and then another. And I ruled on that specific question, which was if motion B failed, would that automatically put motion A back into play? But at the end of that, I actually said that that delegate was welcome to appeal my ruling, which they were, and they could have at that time, and I made the offer. Again, at another point, unsolicited, nobody had come up with this, I said, okay, you guys, I'm going to give a suggestion. Right now, we have no platform that the motion failed to have the national. So if somebody would like to, at this point, make a motion to reconsider, this would be the time to do that. And I made it very clear, and I said it very slowly and succinctly, and no motion was made. You know, I was trying to do my best to spoon feed. And there were at least 36 or 37 people in the room that voted in the affirmative. Any one of them could have made that motion, and nobody did. But then again, at another point after this, Bill Hajdu asked specifically if that particular possibility was dead buried, and I said, no, it is not. Somebody can do that. Nobody has done that, but somebody can do that. And I gave it again. So I believe that I tried very hard to make sure that the delegates knew that this was an option, and I believe that there was no malintent by anybody. I did not vote. But by the way, if it would have been a tie, it would have been completely proper for me to vote. I probably wouldn't have, but just saying that I somehow am not a voting delegate, the chair actually has that possibility and responsibility. So I just, you know, I'm not trying to be on the defensive here, but I do believe that the delegates were very clear on what was happening. I don't know what happened in every county at every portion before the convention. I do know that on Saturday, Friday night, Saturday, and Saturday night, people were discussing this. I don't know that everybody knew about it, but I know there were discussions. I didn't feel that there was a blindside or an ambush. But if the Judicial Committee feels that there was, that's up to them. So I'm just in closing saying I don't have a horse in this race. I'm not arguing. Well, I'm on the appeal. You know, I'm one of the respondents, but I just think that the Judicial Committee needs to look carefully at what is in our rules and also what the delegates wanted. And again, the motion to delete on the first vote passed by 52%, and on the second vote, even though there's questions about whether that was proper or not, passed by 56%. And there were delegates there voting, and I don't believe that we as a body should take that right away from the delegates, because the delegates are the ones that are responsible for setting what our platform is going to be. And on that, I'll yield to Chuck.
Thank you. Chuck, are you there?
Okay, I'm sorry. I was speaking with my mute button. Thank you. I'd like to urge the Judicial Committee that the only way the appellants should be able to succeed in this is if they can prove a rules violation. And I think what we're seeing throughout this phone call and throughout the responsive brief is, instead of an appeal to the rules, they're appealing to other ideals that nobody knows about. There's no certainty as to what these ideals are. Yes, we all probably can agree on some vague ideals, but it's not something that we can act on as a body and as an organization. So because of that, this appeal should only succeed if they can point out a rules violation. So first we look at our bylaws. And our bylaws don't talk about precedent or what other organizations do or don't do. The way we proceeded with this motion looked at our bylaws, with this, the recommendations that are at issue to delete the platform. We relied on the bylaws. The delegates at the convention relied on the bylaws. So I would ask that the Judicial Committee also rely on the bylaws. In the writing of our responsive brief, that's all we relied on, was the bylaws and Robert's rules and the facts of this case. So the bylaws govern. They are specific. We first can go to Bylaw 14.3, Bylaw 14, Section 3. It gives us the scope of the Judicial Committee's authority here, and it limits it. It says the Judicial Committee shall review this action, but it shall be limited to the consistency of the action or inaction in accordance with the governing documents of the party, not precedent, not what other parties are doing, and not ideals either. Include in what the governing documents are, it goes on to say bylaws and documents to which they refer, and of course that could include Robert's rules. And then it gives a couple of exceptions. The Judicial Committee could be mandated by these bylaws for something else, which I will address, but it's not this. Maybe the arbitration of a party contract. That's not what this is. So since none of the exceptions apply. Well, one of the exceptions that I find in the bylaws is if you were to go to bylaw platform, bylaw 20, which addresses the platform section 2. If a delegate believes on an adopted plank to be in conflict with a statement of principles, the delegate may challenge that plank in writing during the convention to the Judicial Committee. So my point here is that that's where the authority of the Judicial Committee is defined as an exception, as outlined in Bylaw 14, Rule 3. That's the only exception I can find. In that case, if those requirements under Bylaw 20, Section 2 were to be satisfied, the Judicial Committee could say that that vote or plank could be vetoed and declared null and void. Well, we're already past the convention, so we can't use that as an authority to do what the appellants are asking here. There is no plank to veto. This is not during the convention. There is no conflict with the statement of principles. So moving on, where the bylaws are silent, we use Robert's rules. And I believe both Mimi and Alicia and even the appellants agree that they have done an excellent job in making sure that there was full compliance with Robert rules. And even where there's some disagreement, the written responsive brief gives a really reasonable explanation as to what really happened. Let's see. The one big conflict we have here, the way I see it, is an interpretation as to if the bylaws require a platform. The way I read it, the only way that we can interpret any requirement that a platform is there is only if we choose to have a platform, then there's some requirements on how it should be. Just like the program, if it exists, there are some rules that govern on how it should be. The bylaw does specifically and clearly require adherence to the statement of principles. We cannot delete that. So our bylaws and our delegates, that we know how to require things, but we have not required a platform. Our bylaws do not require it. The delegates have never required a platform. On this issue of notice, not only was I a participant in this process, we not only wanted to follow the rules, we didn't only just make efforts, we did more than I've ever seen anybody do in my time, at least, because I've only been involved in 2.5 years, and for the previous 2 years, almost nothing was done with the platform, and it was so frustrating to me. So and I believe that's why Mimi even asked me to start coordinating this very early on. We didn't have an official formation of the committee until it was allowed by the rules, but we started early because we wanted to get people on board. We wanted to let people know what we were doing, and it was really hard to predict that this was going to boil down to this narrow, specific procedural issue, that that's what everybody was going to be objecting to. Well, regardless of what that procedural issue was, we took the actual intent, which was to get the national platform, and we explained what the procedure was every step of the way. As far as I could tell, that's what happened. And I believe that if there was any lack of notice, it's for people's failure to participate, not because of an intent to hide or ambush. So the participation at the county level is an important part of platform decisions. That's where the participation could happen. And why do I say that? Well, the platform committee members, they are selected by the county organizations. So if you're really interested in what happens with the platform and what happens at the convention, doesn't it stand to reason that you, as an interested party, are going to go to your county meetings and figure that out? Well, that's why I'm saying that there's a lack of participation. And I hear this all the time from only a few people in the party, that there's not enough notice. Well, if you go to the meetings, if you read the agendas, if you participate, then you get the notice. And the people that were participating in the platform committee, we did our best to get that information to where those who are most obviously interested in the outcome of a platform recommendation, that they could have known about what was happening with the platform. And then the delegates who come to the convention, they are also chosen. I mean, they're not only chosen, but they are also chosen at the county level. Well, the delegates at the convention, they voted. And the majority of these people were people from the counties where the platform committee representatives were selected. So, let's see. I personally did my best on Sunday to hand out as many, and I appear at least twice on the camera. I remember going to the microphone a couple times to personally hand out the report, because if we're going to use this concept of usual and customary, which is not in our bylaws, if we're going to use that, what's usual and customary, the way things happen, even very controversial things on the floor at a convention, is people get word of something by looking at a written report or talking to the other delegates. They'll look at the agenda, and then they'll start moving on the floor. They'll start organizing. And I saw various people who are on this call right now doing just that, organizing, because they know that there's some kind of a vote or agenda item that's about to come up, and they start talking to one another. And then they make motions from the floor to suspend the rules, to move the agenda items around if they could, to get a little bit more time to call the question or whatever. That we have a pretty informed group of delegates, and they know how to use the rules, and that's what's usual and customary. They knew this was coming, and if they didn't, it's because they weren't reading. It's not because it was being hidden. My interpretation of Convention Rule 8, I've already gone over that, so I'm not going to repeat that. The platform was old. And what I mean by that is it wasn't unknown. It wasn't recently established. The California platform was something that the California delegates were ready to vote on. They made an informed vote. when they voted to delete the platform. Looking at my notes. The convention delegates are, under Robert's rules, under our own rules, are allowed to interpret the bylaws and the rules. And that's something that Alicia has said, that's something that's in our responsive brief. So even if there is some kind of ambush intent, which nobody has proven, which I completely disagree with, if there's any intent to hide anything, the convention still did what it did. The delegates were still making motions. They were still participating. And even the appellants here have acknowledged that we've followed the rules. Okay. I don't understand anything about any of the comments about bullying. I don't agree with that. I don't think one motion that is, when two motions or two recommendations are announced to the delegates prior, which it was, it was explained by the chair on the day of the convention that there would be a motion, or the recommendation was for a motion to delete and then another motion to adopt. And those things were explained before we did either motion and either vote. So the delegates, I don't think they could have possibly felt bullied, because the delegates are the ones making the decision. There's been a lot of blame placed on the executive committee and the platform committee, and I don't know how you can do that when we followed all the rules, when we relied on the rules, we're relying on the bylaws in making the recommendation, in writing writing this response here. We're only doing and using the rules that we have available to us to make the change that we believe the delegates wanted, and we brought that to the delegates, and they chose that. I don't think the blame should go on any committee or any individual. I think it goes to the delegates, if anybody. And that's why I think this boils down to, what is it the delegates wanted? Well, we have that codified through a vote. It's been written, it's been published, and we have a few individuals that are unhappy with that outcome. I urge this committee to rely on the bylaws the way we have, to give it your best interpretation, and keep in mind that the delegates have the final say in this, and they should have the final say in this. And I'll close with that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. I believe that's all of the people from the respondent group. And so I think we're done. Thank you all for participating. It is now, by my clock, 1:05. And we are adjourned.